I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. It was without question one of the most dynamic and closely watched political races of the municipal election in Northumberland County, incumbent Mayor Bob Sanderson against Councillor Terry Hickey. They squared off in a battle for the mayor's chair with two very distinct visions. There is little doubt that sparks flew during the campaign, but in the end, Sanderson won handily, defeating his opponent by more than 1,400 votes. And on Tuesday, he was sworn into office for his second term. I would like to welcome as my guest today, Port Hope Mayor Bob Sanderson. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Robert. Nice to be here.
One of the main bones of contention during the election was the old Port Hope Hospital building, which is currently undergoing a Conservation Review Board hearing over a heritage designation to save the building. The last time we spoke on air, you were very agitated over Southbridge's involvement in the municipal election process as it engaged in a social media and other media. Have you spoken to anyone from Southbridge since your victory?
Not spoken, but we've traded information back and forth, and we'll be meeting in January. We did intend to meet in December, but the CEO had some issues with himself scheduling it. So we will meet in January, and the review board should come back to the community in February.
So what are you hoping to discuss at that meeting?
Well, I'm hoping to discuss, you know, the relationship that Southbridge has with their community generally, mm-hmm. right, and how we can assist them in achieving their goals, but also achieving ours. I've always looked for that win-win. I'd like to keep the building, and I, you know, still maintain that we can do that and repurpose it. And I also think we do need the long-term care, and I think we could, you know, assist them in that area too.
Was there any damage done between the relationship between Southbridge and the town through their involvement during the municipal election?
You know, truthfully, Robert, I don't think so. There's no reason for it. I mean, there's things that happen during election campaigns, mm-hmm. you know, even between candidates and stuff. When all is said and done, you move on. You know, and I think Southbridge and the relationship that we'll have with the community going forward, you know, the intent is to have a positive one.
So the Conservation Review Board hearing that's coming up, I believe it's on February 11th.
Correct.
Scheduled for 3 days. I understand, though, that there was some pre-hearings in October and also that there's been some teleconferences. Can you help us know what took place in those teleconferences?
I can, but it's mostly just a process where they're updating us on their activities. They're validating who wants to continue to be involved, what their, you know, relationship is. So it's kind of a process. It's not, you know, we're not debating issues.
Mm-hmm.
We're just validating information going forward. You know, who's being represented, who is part of the process, who is perhaps backed off and doesn't want to be there, because there was a lot of involvement, a lot of people, including Southbridge, on an individual basis, who wanted representation during this process.
Okay, so nothing behind closed doors, nothing's been exchanged.
None
of the debate. It's just a process of exchanging
information. It's a normal process, and it's driven by the review board.
Okay, now, how do you think this is going to turn out as we go forward with this? Because there's still a lot of emotion. There's still a lot of people being vocal about this. What's your expectation once we hit the hearing and then what happens afterwards?
Let me comment on both those, because I think part of it is the community, you know, has had the opportunity over a period of time to kind of rationalize things a little bit, because the whole process has started with some urgency, and the urgency created, you know, some, I think, polarization, some anxiety. It was people versus buildings kind of thing. As time went by, and certainly the election campaign, I think, assisted this, more and more information came out, you know, to sort of tone the rhetoric down a little bit on both sides, right? And I think now people are sort of looking at the process and looking to the new council to say, how do we move this forward? So I expect fully that the review board will come back and validate the fact that that building can be designated and maybe should be designated. What people, I think, have to realize is that, in fact, it's going to be a council decision one way or the other. All that information will come back to council, and council will make a decision to designate or to not designate.
So the board doesn't have the power to come in and say to council, sorry, it has to be knocked down, or sorry, South Bridge, it's got to stay. That's not their role.
No, it's absolutely not.
Their role is to just look at it as, is it feasible for this building to be preserved? Is that their mandate?
Well, feasible to be preserved. Does it warrant designation? Does the architectural features on that building warrant that the community should look at it to preserve it?
So that's basically their role.
Validation, of designation.
Okay. All right. So then it comes back to council.
Yep.
And then what's the process moving forward from that then?
Well, there's probably a couple options there. One, we could, face it right on and decide to designate.
Mm-hmm.
We could probably delay designation, through discussions. So, it doesn't have to be an affirmative designation right away. And hopefully, the discussions will go on with Southbridge.
Now, during the election campaign, many people took positions on this. Has everybody been polled about this on the new council yet? Have you got a sense of where people are standing on this?
No. I think from the election, we sort of have an idea where councillors stand. But there's a lot of issues. So the primary discussions that I've had individually with the new councillors, and collectively, are about the procedures mostly. How we're going to go forward, what are your priorities, how are we going to work as a team, not trying to lobby for any particular issue.
In your discussions, or your communication, with Southbridge since the election, have you seen, you've been pretty consistent in your presentation of your view. Has there been any softening on their side? Have you noticed a willingness to sort of come and compromise? Has there been a spirit or a change in the energy between Southbridge and the town?
I really can't comment because I haven't seen it personally.
Mm-hmm.
I think Southbridge is continuing to have interaction within the community.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly are trying to have discussions with myself and counselors. I think they are looking at the options for alternative sites. They're a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
If, in fact, the building's designated, I would not think for a second they're not pre-planning or thinking what they should do.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I'd like to clearly, state is that with their revamping of their business, it's not like they're creating a whole bunch more long-term care.
Mm-hmm.
We have it. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's just to try to make it better. And can it be made better there? The likelihood of losing long-term care in Port Hope, in my opinion, is virtually zero. So we're going to walk and leave. It's not a discussion point. It's how do we get you to stay and what's the best scenario to stay. And I will maintain very clearly that finding an alternate site that's the appropriate size, instead of being 2.86 acres, it's actually supposed to be 4 and would be 4.
Mm-hmm.
Having a purpose-built building for that, and then moving residents into that, is totally achievable. Where the unknown is, from my perspective, is what will it take to repurpose the current building, from a financial perspective? Is it economically, real, and can it be done? Those are sort of two different factors. I firmly believe, and I've been through the building, that we should keep that building. And that it can be repurposed. How it's repurposed, we probably need to have some professional input on it. Will it be a care facility? I don't think so. The rooms that are there and the hallways and all the stuff that Southbridge talked about, they're real. So one of the things I have asked to look at is how could we repurpose that building and marry it to our affordable housing shortage? Because it is a good building. It has, probably 35 or 40 rooms in it. And one of the concepts I've thrown out there is to say, without major structural changes, but if you improve so they had the elevator, the fire suppression, meet code, which would cost a lot, no question about it. But you might have 40, kind of suites, mm-hmm. apartment suites, because they all have bathrooms and what mm-hmm. have you. So perhaps it could be like, I've said, if you go to Toronto or Vancouver or Montreal, you now have these suite hotels.
Mm-hmm.
People buy a suite and they also use them as, revenue generations. We have a lot of jobs on the horizon and we don't have much accommodation. We have post-secondary opportunities for students and creating courses, but there's no student accommodation. There's no single accommodation, at a reasonable price. So I'm really hoping that we can look at the potential anyway taking a building like that, and maybe we have municipal involvement, you know, and the private sector combined and government funding for repurposing, I think all the components are there for a win if we will kind of move it forward that way.
I wanted to talk to you about affordable housing, so I appreciate you doing the transition for me.
That's a little wonderful. Segue for you, right?
During the campaign, and it's been very apparent even towards the end of this council, last council's term, there was a strong sense that Port Hope wanted to take on the affordable housing portfolio at its level, not at the county level where it normally has sat for a very long period of time. You've mentioned plans even now that you're starting to talk about, and even in your speech during the swearing-in ceremony earlier this week, you talked about affordable housing. How is that going to manifest itself within council? Is it going to become a portfolio similar to planning, to tourism, economic development, budget? Is it going to have a committee? How do you see that rolling out so that something does get done? Because I know that was something urgent for you during the campaign.
Yeah, I can't answer all those questions because I think it's going to be work in progress. I think the key elements, you know, number one is to recognize it as a municipal priority and get all of council to buy in that that's the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we can talk about it. I still think it's a county mandate, mm-hmm. but I think we need to be advocates and partner with the county. I also think that we need to look very seriously at, you know, what municipal involvement from a financial basis. Are we really going to put our money where our mouth is? And can we, as an example, you know, form a housing commission? And can we partner, you know, with government? Can we partner with private, you know, industry? Can we, you know, take part of that destiny and put some skin in the game? I mean, personally, I would advocate for that. But, you know, to be determined, we're early in the game.
Sure. Do you see this becoming a line item then in the upcoming budget? Because I know your budget talks are coming up in the next few weeks.
No, we're well along the you know, budget process, primarily with levy and what have you. But what I do see during this first year, mm-hmm. you know, is you know, setting the priorities relative to, I mean, we have the new community development portfolio, mm-hmm. and I would see it falling under that with Director Tom Dodds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to take a fair bit of time to work forward. And then I think it is possible to create, you know, an economic scenario where it's actually an investment with a return on investment.
Oh, now you mentioned a housing commission. Maybe everybody doesn't understand what that would be. Well, how do you envision that? What's that? How does that work?
Well, again, you know, I can only tell you that there's other examples around. I don't know how it would work for us, but it would mean that we would, in fact, you know, be participating financially, you know, and politically, economically in affordable housing. We would become part and parcel, you know, of perhaps owning properties, municipal.
I could see critics looking at you and saying, oh, it's not the role of municipal government to be in the housing business. Yep. Is that what you're seeing, or is it something different?
Oh, I expect to have critics for sure.
Okay.
Such a pretty strong ones. You know, but I think if you come forward with an appropriate plan, you know, an action plan,
mm-hmm.
and in my inaugural speech, I said we have to do things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't sit and say it's everybody's responsibility. And housing and some of the social issues that we have, you know, I think we have to tackle them. I think the bottom line, the critics will come when you don't have a good process, you don't have a good plan, you know, and you're just, say, you know, taking taxpayers' dollars and subsidizing things. I see this as an investment with return on investment. So, say, take the building, you know, at 65 Ward. This is far out, haven't talked to anybody, but why can't we partner with Southbridge and say, let's keep that building, find you another spot. How about you partner with us, you know, with repurposing it, and we'll have 40 one-bedroom suites or 35 of those, and maybe we can turn a couple into other ones where the rents might be $600 or $700 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But built into that rent is a return on the investment where we, because it would be non-profit, but anything that was made would then go into purpose-built more of those.
Mm-hmm.
So I truly look at it from a business perspective as a, you know, opportunity, solving the problem, helping people, and making money.
Come January 22nd, you have to declare as a municipality whether or not you're going to allow retail cannabis in your within your boundaries. And I was looking around, and I couldn't find anything sort of about a process to make that decision. Where's Port Hope on that spectrum?
Interesting question. I think, you know, we're making mountains out of molehills here, right? And I understand the, you know, public process, and there are some legislative requirements. First off, opting out means two things. You will not have any retail outlet in your, you know, municipality. If you opt out, you also opt out of all revenue opportunities from the government, right? So they're not going to obviously take any. And my understanding in talking to MPP Pacini is that approximately 50% of the government revenues will return back to the municipalities. And that's appropriate because we will have increased costs related to that, you know, like liquor control boards and all that kind of stuff. At this point in time, we're kind of fortunate, I think, in Port Hope, and I've talked to the clerk about this. I know Coburg is having a survey, and they're having a public meeting. I'm not advocating that at all. We have a committee of the whole where these matters come up. There's 2 weeks of public input. We have open microphones for people. We have delegations. I think that process is totally adequate to deal with this. So, quite frankly, it's going to go into our normal process.
Has anybody talked to you on the street about it? Has anybody called you up and voiced their opinions on it?
Yeah, but not in great waves or anything. A couple people, you know, have asked about it. I probably had one person who says they would be totally against it. If you look at our municipal police force, I think they're taking a very, very good approach to it. They are saying, in fact, you know, they're undertaking an educational program. And their opinion is that having it within the community is better than having it outside the community and coming in where they don't know what's going on. So it'll come before council, but I don't certainly get any, you know, public, you know, impression that we're going to opt out or that we're against it. Probably the opposite.
So once you start that process in April, you've got to come up, I guess, with a series of bylaws. There's planning regulations that have to go in. Where do you place them? Was there a licensing process? All that kind of stuff. Where are you in that continuum in terms of being ready for it? Because April is not that far away.
Yep, I think from a municipal perspective, we need the decision to opt out or not, you mm-hmm. know, primarily. And then I think some of the zoning bylaws and what have you, we certainly have time to manage that. And we've had discussions internally about, you know, that sort of thing. I think the police are well prepared with their educational programs. So I think our process will be quite good. And the government does have requirements also.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll, you know, obviously follow those. So I don't see it as being anything other than, quite frankly, routine.
You embarked on a consolidation of your administration in the last term, and you just recently hired, and you mentioned them, a community development person that's doing economic development, marketing, tourism, planning, that kind of thing. What's your vision going forward for that role? Because it's really interesting, I think, that you combine marketing, tourism, and planning. How do those like the two, marketing and tourism, I could see being sort of synergistic, but where does planning fit into that in your vision, and how is that going to roll out in the future?
Well, this is a good conversation from my perspective, because I've really been trying to build that municipal team to be a board of directors, and as you know, we've had this discussion about a CAO. Mm-hmm. And I'm not anti-CAO. We don't need one right now, and it's not about the position probably as much as the person. But right now, by adding this department, I guess the most simple way I'd put it is the directors we have and the departments we have run the municipality in exemplary fashion. They're very good. What this new position does is look at our long-term strategic goals, and that department will be responsible for forward-looking planning, short term to some degree, but very much long term. Planning now generally is almost reactive, if you want to call it. We deal with everything that comes before us, and we sort it out. But in during the election and everything else, what is Port Hope going to be in 25 or 40 years? And how do we do that? And I've talked about the development pressure at Port Hope Center. How do we manage that well? You know, and so that is primarily, the purpose. This is the eyes forward department, the more forward thinking, longer term strategies. Well, we're all running the ship and making sure it's okay. Somebody's got to say the port is going to be, 2 weeks from now, we're going to, park the ship there. We have to get there. And it's going to be very, I think, complicated, a lot of priorities. So what I've asked that director to do, relatively new, coming in at a budget time is hard. I said, live with the budget. Planning, all that stuff already has a budget. And then perhaps do a 4 to 6 month business plan, right? And a business plan to me is truly a business plan. It has economic requirements for it. We have the PHAI cleanup going on. We're going to have properties, lakefront properties, municipal properties that all are potential assets for economic development and social development. So this community that we're going to have, say, starting in 5 years, going through the next 25 years, we still want to be, from everything I can see, kind of small-town Ontario approach, values, principles, agriculturally based, strong requirement to keep our heritage, our culture. How do we keep that? How do we stop from being steamrolled into where I grew up, Oakville, Mississauga? It seems to be consistent. So if we can do some longer-term strategy and we can really carve out that's what we want to be, we need to know how to do it. And that's going to be a real challenge.
We're going to come back to this, but first we're going to take a break. So I'm here with Port Hope Mayor Bob Sanderson, so please stay tuned to consider this on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. And we're back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn. My guest today is Port Hope Mayor Bob Sanderson. I wanted to come back we were talking before the break about the consolidation of administration and economic development. Did Danby come to you guys at all when they were looking for a location? Danby just announced that it's creating an assembly here in Cobourg, and I wondered, had they been shopping around? Did they come and talk to you at all?
From the county perspective, yes, but not Port Hope that I'm aware of.
It didn't. Is that a lost opportunity for you guys?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, we're kind of one community from a county perspective, but
also from Port Hope perspective, we're kind of limited on our opportunities right now. We filled almost all our employment lands.
So they didn't come and talk to you. So in terms of economic development, then what's your strategy going forward? Now that you do have these lands that are full, what are next steps?
Find some more, one of the things I always maintain is that sometimes it seems like we sit and wait for people to come to us, but I think with our new department we'll start to look at going out and kind of specifically fishing where the fish are, if you want to say, but deciding what are the businesses we want, what does it take, to provide for them, because we're seeing more opportunity than I think most, municipalities, and that includes Cobourg, because we're that West Northumberland chunk where mm-hmm. people are starting to move out of the higher priced, GTA area. Mm-hmm. And they're looking for opportunities in our, communities. And that includes, Cobourg and Port Hope for sure. Where the employment's going to come from and where the jobs, and we go back that full cycle of we need to have housing for people to come to be able to work, for younger people to be able to move into the community. And what kind of jobs are we creating? And is there any strategy behind that? And that's what I think the new department is going to do. And one of the things we're definitely looking forward to is working in close relationship with Cobourg and the county, and we're working with the county looking at employment opportunities for land zoning. Mm-hmm. How are we going to develop that, because it our official plans are coming forward probably in a couple of years, and the the landscape's always changing. So
part of economic development for you, though, is balancing both the urban and the rural. And farmers are a big part of your community. With the new trade deal with the United States, dairy farmers have taken quite a big hit. Are you planning to do anything through your economic development issues locally to help these farmers out?
No, not from that perspective. But I think from a recognizing the importance of the agriculture to try to make it a stronger economic base itself and work with the agricultural groups and farmers. Yes, we're already involved in that and talking to you know, some of the members of the rural community. But from a trade perspective, you know,
I know you also sit on county council as the mayor of Port Hope. I know that farmers have come to you concerned about increasing tax rates because of the municipal assessment. And the county did, when they first came forward, say that it was going to look at it. Has that moved forward at all? Because that might provide some relief to farmers.
No. And really what you're talking about is the ratio of taxes. In the end, you know, a dollar's a dollar. Where does it come from? And if the increase in municipal assessments for agricultural land has had an impact on farmers, their taxes are up. They're concerned about succession planning. But if we, you know, take a penny from here and move it over there, somebody else has got to pay for it. And the biggest component is residential. And so we're very hesitant, you know, I think generally from all community perspectives. So to your original question, has it advanced more during this budget? This budget is coming just before county, but the allocation, there's no major indication that I think it'll change.
Earlier this week, you were sworn into office, and I want to know what goes on in your mind when you're standing there up in front of the judge and your wife and your family and your friends and the public as you take that oath of office.
The level of responsibility and commitment, and you know, you take that very seriously, and I would tell you that anybody who did run for, you know, election in the municipal area, everybody says it. I think it's really critical, and I watched each and every, because we did our swearing in individually this time, and I looked at every council member we had and saw the intensity, you know, in taking that oath and how important it was, and that's to be, you know, sustained. And I felt very invigorated, you know, to be able to look at that council, to look out at the audience, see the support that the community's coming forward, and it definitely, without question, you know, gives you a lot of energy, you know, and commitment to do all these things.
For those who've never seen it, what do they actually ask you to swear to? Like, what are they asking you to take an oath of?
Well, it's a set oath for most offices, and it basically says you will do the job to the best of your ability. Mm-hmm. You will obviously not have any financial gain, direct or indirect, and no personal interest. You really do have a governance role, and you commit, you know, to working for the community, you know, independent of any personal, you know, aspect, and that you guarantee that is the case. And you also swear allegiance to Her Majesty, you know, and basically to the country. It's impactful.
Is it emotional?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I felt it. I mean, you don't try to show it particularly, but I saw all the new counselors and the old counselors, you know, really take it in. You know, there was emotion. Not bad, you know, certain anxiety, certain, you know, nervousness, but all positive. So there, no question, it's very emotional. Yeah.
Now, you wore a gown and you have a chain of office. What does it feel like to wear that chain of office? Because that's a very important symbol.
I've only started to wear it more in the last year, and we did have a gown made because there traditionally is a gown for ceremonial purposes, but I'm not a large person. That last gown was a large flowing magenta gown, so I wasn't really keen on wearing it. But the bottom line is that chain of office and the robes and the, you know, ceremony that goes with it just is deemed to show respect to the community. that's how I look at it. It shows respect for the position. And so certainly in my term, I intend to, you know, make sure that the position that's being held, you know, garnishes the respect that it deserves.
Is it heavy?
I can put it on you someday if you like, but no, it's not heavy.
It's not heavy?
No, it's not.
And it's quite ornate. What are all the metal parts, the circular parts that make it up, and then there's a part that drops down?
Mostly just crests, mm-hmm. you know, and the central part is specific to the municipality of Porto, as the rest of it is. I don't know how old that chain is. We've sort of tried to look at it, and we also want to make sure that it reflects you know, the current status, the blended community and all that kind of stuff. So we are looking at that central medallion, which probably does need to be changed to bring it up to, you know, kind of our municipal standards right now.
Now, I know in your job, you must seek a lot of advice from people, and you have experts around you that are always feeding you information, but on those personal decisions, the ethical stuff, the stuff when it's just, you know, you deciding how you go forward, do you have someone that you go to for advice?
Not really. You know, I have a medical background, mm-hmm. you know, so I think that inherent in everything I've done, include corporate activities, that's standard. There are lots of places to go, you know, for ethics, mm-hmm. Information training, and it's like sensitivity training. I get a series of those kind of emails all the time, and mm-hmm. I just read through them, mm-hmm. and quite often they don't change anything, but they can remind you, you know, if you're in small business, this could look this way or this could look that way. So I think it's a self-examination, mm-hmm. To make sure if there's anything in doubt specifically, I go to the clerk. You know, I say, this is coming up, and here's, you know, as an example, when I had businesses downtown, mm-hmm. And something would come up, I'd like to make sure that not only the optics are correct, but that it is absolutely correct, and you should step back. And there's been some changes in, you know, the conflict of interest requirements of council. And we can challenge each other, but now you must put in a written information to say I intend to declare a conflict of interest, and this is the reason why. And I think those are good. But back to your original comment, I think people inherently know what's right or wrong. Sometimes you like to pretend you don't or something, but yeah. No, I don't have any problem with that at all. I don't think any of the other council members do. And if there's something on the agenda specifically, you know, then you can go and seek information.
Will you be ensuring that all councillors go through sensitivity training and the appropriate training modules that are necessary?
Yeah, it's another area that I think we are going to strengthen. I'll give you an example. When we have sessions in camera, they're confidential, you know, and everybody knows that. But I want to bring forward so that everybody signs at every meeting and understands exactly what that means. The self-governance of council itself is a topic I'm bringing forward with our policy and procedures, so that we would be aware, mm-hmm. you know, of, you know, councillors who do not meet the requirements that we, you know, expect. Mm-hmm. They're not mandatory and they're not required, but they should be kind of required, mm-hmm. among ourselves.
What about sensitivity training?
Same thing. You know, those are all available to us, and those come forward through our human resources. Our staff takes them, and I think councillors should take the same thing.
Are you going to require it this time?
Yes, in that we would like to know from a council perspective that you have taken the courses recommended or if you have not. What we can do about it is another thing which we have to self-decide. You know, can we have any, you know, punishment? I actually think the punishment would be making the public aware you're not doing it.
Is this going to be part of your council discussions? In other words, making this, deciding whether or not this should be a mandatory? Because the last council, it was very devastating to one of the members.
Yep, it will be a discussion without question that we will have, and we've already, not this council, but from a staff perspective, myself and the incumbents, that we're well aware that this if we want openness and transparency, it's got to be on that level too. Yeah.
Do you have a confidant? Somebody, you know, on a personal level that you can go to and kind of bounce things off of as a sounding board for working things out?
Not any one person. Mm-hmm. You know, I think generally I have, you know, a lot of very intelligent people close to me. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, I'm very comfortable, you know, verbalizing and talking about it. Not to, you know, betray any confidences from a municipal perspective. Mm-hmm. But we all, you know, have our friends and relatives and family. Mm-hmm. You know, and the other thing, I do have that open door policy, and I've been fortunate enough that people use it.
We all see you as mayor, and when you run into people, they treat you as mayor. When are there times when you're not mayor? Do you have moments like that where you don't feel like you're being treated as a mayor? Where does that take place?
Well, I think it happens a lot, actually. You know, I've been in the municipality for a long time, and mm-hmm. you know, come to Coburg a lot and throughout the area, and generally I think people are aware, mm-hmm. but it's not an interaction. I very seldom do people sort of come to me in the day-to-day with a major requirement and sort of interrupt your dinners or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm not having a, you know, if I'm understanding the question, I feel very comfortable. I'm just another person in the municipality crossing the street and having a coffee.
Because I wonder, is there a feeling of being mayor or feeling of being just a regular guy? I wonder that.
It's a combination. You know, there's some restrictions being in the community, knowing you're mayor. You are the face of the community, and I take that very responsibly. Mm-hmm. I also, you know, respect that people sometimes ask questions, but I think that the level of respect and the interaction is quite good. We had a lot of people running for council this time. Mm-hmm. I think part of it is because the community is calm, it's comfortable, mm-hmm. and people aren't feeling attacked. So
you've never been like shopping for groceries and somebody come up and start talking to you about an issue?
Oh, no, that has happened, but it doesn't happen often. Oh. Yeah, mostly it's, good afternoon, Mayor, how are you doing, or whatever.
Okay. Power is often said that power has a price. What price do you pay to hold your position as mayor? Something you sacrifice?
I don't think so. Your personal time. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't get a lot of as much personal time. But if the staff and the people around you are you know, very competent, you can get a little bit more. I want to talk about the power, though. I actually don't have any.
I don't know.
The power of persuasion, maybe.
Well, you run the meetings. I mean, at least you'd say when people can speak and not speak, I guess.
Yeah, but I don't look at that as power. I look at that as protocol.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's maintaining decorum. And I think that's very important, same as we're talking about the chain and the ropes and what have you. But I get one vote. Anybody else?
Okay. Let's talk about the county. Because oftentimes when you're in, we don't get a chance to talk about the county. And as you look forward to the next 4 years, what do you see as being priorities for Northumberland overall?
Well, I'd like to make a couple of comments on that. I've spent a lot of time and effort on the municipality of Port Hope. And I look forward to actually getting more involved in the county level as well and bringing some of our advocacy and our requirements to a county level. You know, so I think from a county perspective, shared resources with the municipalities, being closer to the municipalities, a county has now got a person on staff who specifically looks for funding opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And it started off only looking at the county, and in discussions, you know, I asked them that's been achieved. That now goes out to all the municipalities. Right, so we've got somebody who's kind of a shared resource, you know, looking at funding, so we're not missing funding opportunities that we may not be aware of. The social programs, the housing, and some of the strategic goals the county has, I really think all our municipalities, and maybe with this new council, we'll be a little more cohesive, right, in working together. Economic development is not county. You know, it's not just Port Hope or just Coburg. You know, it is joint. We're working with the county to look at expanding employment land that's going to be closer to Port Hope. This is the relationship I would like to, you know, help achieve at a stronger level.
Will you run for warden?
No, I'm actually going to be nominating somebody else.
Okay.
Not at this point, anyway.
Okay. Just because, I mean, you'll have, going in, you'll have probably one of the few people that has the most experience. Everybody else that's coming on is new.
Well, Mayor Logan and myself now become senior statesmen for the county.
Is that right? The two of you, eh? All right. Let's go back, though, to county government. One of the things that you talked about for your municipality in Port Hope is getting stuff done. It's not just about talking. It's about moving forward. The county seems to be doing a lot of consulting lately. You see press releases coming out almost weekly. You know, we're checking about early on. We're checking about this program or that program or this kind of thing and that kind of thing. Do you see a need to take that can do or get it done attitude at the county level as well?
At every level, provincial government, federal government, county level, our own municipality. Absolutely. Yeah.
So what would you like to see then? What sort of changes do you want to see that will maybe flip that over a bit more than we've seen in the past?
Well, the county has a very good strategic planning process. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like it. But every time you start to grow an entity, I think the depth and breadth, you know, demands a little bit more due diligence. So I do support the consultations that occur. Mm-hmm. But then I look and say, well, how is it going to be implemented? And I think we have seen some. A few years ago when I started, homelessness was something that didn't happen. Well, now the county's actively, you know, working on it. And so I really think I'm seeing that starting to occur. And it'll have to occur, you know, at a different level than the municipal level. But if we work together on the can-do attitude, so let's go back to affordable housing or whatever, mm-hmm. but let's get it done. What does it take as an investment, you know, and how do we make that happen? Some of the social responsibility. And the county is often criticized, you know, by people within the municipality because it's, you know, taking tax dollars. And I don't think that they know how much the county is doing. And I think the communication and awareness within the population would be good too. So back to the original thing, I think the county is starting, you know, to have, at least I'm seeing it even within this term that I've had, you know, more of a can-do and must-do attitude.
It's interesting that you mentioned, because that was something that I wanted to ask you, was how do we get people more engaged and more knowledgeable about what the county does? Because I think if you did a streeter and asked people, you know, what are county responsibilities and what are local responsibilities, most people wouldn't know how to respond. They really, you know, I know they take our tax dollars, but what is it they actually do and what are they doing for me every day might be something they may not be able to answer. What do you see specifically that needs to be done so that more people are engaged with that level of government? Because a lot of money and a lot of things funnel through them that actually do affect us directly.
I do, you know, this is just me talking here, mm-hmm. but I do two ways. I think the communication with that goal in mind, you know, needs to be targeted so that people, you know, do become engaged and supportive of what the county's doing. I think we need to do it together with the municipalities. So when we send out our information, we recognize that what you're